From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, our weekly drop-in at the UN headquarters in New York begins with a press conference from the Secretary General's spokesperson, Stephane Dujarric, followed by Monica Grayley, the spokesperson for the President of the General Assembly.
Reminder, the Secretary General is off to Osaka, Japan today, where he will attend the G20 summit. The Secretary General is expected to speak at a session on climate change, environment, and energy. He will also participate in sessions on topics including the global economy, innovation, and inequalities, and he will also take part in a leader side event on women's empowerment. While at the summit, the Secretary General will hold bilateral meetings with world leaders in attendance. The G20 leaders, in a letter to the G20 leaders ahead of the summit, the Secretary General said that 4 years after the landmark agreement on the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, we have to accelerate efforts towards the implementation of the Sustainable Development Goals and address our changing climate. The Secretary General called on leaders to exercise their leadership in three areas. First, he encouraged G20 members to take the lead in implementing policies that promote not only rapid, robust growth, but also equitable growth. Second, he stressed the need to increase the flow of public and private finance towards investments aligned with the SDGs, in part by shaping incentives so that private capital flows towards sustainable development. And third, he emphasized the need to seize the opportunities of the rapid advancing digital revolution while cautioning that digital divides can also grow rapidly. We will share the full letter with you shortly in a note to correspondent. And then on Sunday, the Secretary General will be in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates to attend the climate preparatory meeting, which seeks to galvanize momentum and support for the solutions needed to tackle the climate emergency ahead of his climate action summit that he is convening in September in New York. Before heading off to Japan, the Secretary General spoke at an informal meeting of the General Assembly on combating anti-Semitism and other forms of racism and hate. He said that anti-Semitism has not been extinguished, far from it. In the United States, Europe, and elsewhere, attacks on synagogues, graveyards, and individuals continue to make many Jews feel unsafe. This intolerance is also being directed at other faiths as well as migrants and refugees, he said, with social media accelerating the rapid spread of bigotry. The Secretary General stressed that we need to treat hate speech as we treat every malicious act by condemning it and refusing to amplify it. The Secretary General added that we also need to invest in social cohesion so that all members of society can feel that their identities are respected. He pointed out to the recently launched UN strategy to combat hate speech and the high-level panel on digital cooperation as examples of UN combating intolerance online and offline. I guarantee you that I will continue to call out anti-Semitism, racism, and all forms of hatred loudly and unapologetically, he said. His full remarks are online. A note from our special envoy for Yemen, Martin Griffiths, who is today in Saudi Arabia. He in Riyadh, where he met with Yemeni Vice President Ali Mohsen. Their meeting discussed steps needed to move forward with the peace process in Yemen, and they reiterated the importance of achieving sustainable and speedy progress in implementing the Stockholm Agreement. Mr. Griffiths said he was encouraged by the openness and flexibility of the government of Yemen and its continued commitment towards achieving peace. He said that he is determined to advance the peace process based on national dialogue outcome, the Gulf Cooperation Council initiative, and related Security Council resolutions, and restart possible consultations with the parties. Back here next door in the Security Council chamber, Rosemary DiCarlo, the head of the Political and Peacebuilding Department, briefed the Security Council on the implementation of Resolution 2231 concerning nonproliferation and Iran. Ms. DiCarlo said the Secretary General is concerned about recent developments. He regrets that the United States recently decided not to extend waivers with regard to trade oil with Iran and not to fully renew waivers for nonproliferation projects in the framework of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
She also said that the Secretary General regretted Iran's announcement on 8 May that it would not commit itself to respecting the JCPOA's limits on its enriched uranium stockpile and heavy water reserves at the current stage, and its subsequent announcement on June 17th that Iran may surpass the June 27th limit on its enriched uranium stockpiles under the JCPOA. Recent events in the Gulf are a reminder that we are at a critical junction, Ms. DiCarlo added. She said that the Secretary General calls on all member states to avoid action that may result in further deterioration of the current situation. Her remarks have been shared with you. Also happening this morning, the Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution extending the sanctions on the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The resolution reiterated the need for the government to swiftly and fully investigate the 2017 killing of two members of the group of experts, Zaida Catalan and Michael Sharp, and four Congolese nationals accompanying them, and to bring those responsible to justice. Yesterday afternoon, Mark Locock, the Emergency Relief Coordinator, briefed Security Council members on the continuing violence in Syria, telling council members, "We have repeatedly asked you to make this stop. It has not stopped or even slowed." Instead, he said, over the last weekend of 21-23 June, we received reports of airstrikes affecting more than 55 communities in Idlib, Hama, and Aleppo, and artillery shelling affecting more than 21 communities. Mr. Locock provided details about the deconfliction system under which parties are provided with the coordinates of medical facilities and other humanitarian sites to help the parties take precautions to spare them. He said that more can be done to strengthen the system, but the critical question is what those receiving information on the location of medical facilities are doing with that information. Tomorrow, the Security Council will receive a briefing from the Special Envoy, Geir Pedersen, who will brief via video technology from Geneva. And on Mali, the International Organization for Migration reports today that intercommunal violence and floods in the Mopti region are aggravating an already precarious humanitarian situation for over 50,000 internally displaced people. There are also concerns that the increasing number of displaced people in Mopti may overwhelm existing response resources. There are over 210,000 people facing food insecurity. Only 2% of the communities have access to safe drinking water. Government authorities, civil society organizations, and UN agencies in Bamako and Mopti are working to address the most urgent needs of the more than 120,000 displaced people currently registered in the country. Meanwhile, the UN peacekeeping mission has enhanced its presence in the Mopti region to better protect civilians from attacks. And you will recall that yesterday the Secretary General met with 10 chairs of the Human Rights Treaty body that are in New York for their annual meetings to discuss their work. A note we issued afterwards said together with the High Commissioner for Human Rights, the Secretary General's office is attempting to mitigate the impact of the work of the treaty bodies of the work of the treaty body system of budget reductions adopted by the General Assembly in 2017, which are further compounded by the financial crisis facing the organization. The Secretary General reaffirmed the importance of the crucial human rights work done by treaty bodies and emphasized it is crucial for human rights and victims, around the world, that committees can count on the necessary support and resources to fulfill their mandate. Today is the International Day Against Drug Abuse and Illicit Trafficking, and the UN Office on Drugs and Crime has released its World Drug Report 2019. This report reveals that 35 million people around the world suffer from drug disorder, while only 1 in 7 receive treatment. According to the report, improved research and more precise data have revealed that the adverse health consequences on drug use are more severe and widespread than previously thought. The report also estimates that the number of opioid users at 53 million, up 56% from previous estimates. It says that opioids are responsible for 2/3 of the 585,000 people who died as a result of drug overdose in 2017. And today is the International is Charter Day, because on this date, 74 years ago, the UN Charter was signed on June 26, 1945 in San Francisco. It came into force on UN Day, 24th of October, 1945. As you heard from Monica, there is an event in the GA Hall at 3 p.m. And the special advisor for the UN 75 commemorations, Fabrizio Hochschild, will present the Secretary General's plan to observe this emblematic date. And this will be followed by a symbolic ceremony for ambassadors' signature of the charter as a gesture of renewed commitment to the charter. We could always be renew our commitments to the charter. And a short while, I will be joined here in a few minutes by David Shearer, the head of the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan. He will brief you on the situation there. After his briefing, Chantal Lynn Carpentier, chief of the office of UNCTAD in New York, will brief you on the 2019 edition of the annual report, Made in Africa, Rules of Origin for Enhanced Intra-African Trade. Then at 2:45, the permanent representative of the United Kingdom and Peru will brief at the Security Council stakeout to provide you on an update on their mission to Colombia. And you already know, tomorrow at 11 o'clock, the PGA will brief you. And now I will take your questions. Errol Abdovich.
Thank you very much, Monsieur Dujarric. A couple of questions. Does the Secretary General, in the light of the speech delivered previously by Rosemary DiCarlo, think that the real solution for this heated crisis in Persian Gulf would be the return to the Resolution 2231? To start with that.
Well, first of all, there needs to be a de-escalation of the tensions that we see. And the Secretary General, as he has said in the past, as Mr. Carlo said clearly, thinks that the JCPOA was a very important diplomatic achievement. And he, obviously, I think we would all benefit by all the parties recommitting themselves to that.
And if I may.
Yeah.
And although the U.S. seems that it's not very much in favor in that end, as one of the permanent member would be kind of, not to say obstacle, but put it whatever you want.
I'm not sure I heard a question there.
So the question
it's
is...
It's more of an analysis. I mean, we're not in the... The Secretary General, I think I would encourage you to read the report that he submitted, which is publicly available, and Mr. Carlo's statement, which I think clearly outlines the Secretary General's position.
What does the Secretary General in that light also have to say in regard of those calls saying that the U.S. and other countries should not sell the or send the weapons to Saudi Arabia and to the region?
I think in terms of the, if you're talking about the situation in Yemen, I think, as we've said, the people of Yemen don't need more weapons, they need peace. Mr. Abadi, and then...
Thank you, Stefan. As you said, the Secretary General is calling on member states to accelerate the implementation of the SDG. How does he specifically suggest doing that?
I think it's a commitment both at the policy level and a financial commitment to ensuring that those policies can be well financed. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I wanted to redirect a question I had for Monica. If the Secretary General has any reaction to the High Commissioner report for the High Commissioner for Human Rights report on the crisis in Venezuela?
No, I mean, the Secretary General, I think, is very pleased with the way the mission unfolded. He's been very supportive and has done whatever he can to ensure that the mission went ahead. And I think the mission by the High Commissioner for Human Rights was a very important step indeed. Yes.
Thank you, Steph. Yesterday was the last day that the International Tribunal on the Law of the Sea gave Russia to fulfill its ruling, which came on 25th May. It ruled to free the 24 Ukrainian sailors that are still held in Moscow. And Russia in this period, in this 1 month, has not done anything. It didn't provide a report, which the International Tribunal forced it to do. So what is the reaction?
I think the tribunal's ruling, I would say, speaks for itself. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, thank you. I'm at the G20. What will the main thrust of the SG's address be, since I imagine the U.S. will be talking about Iran again?
Well, I mean, I think I outlined in the beginning. That's okay. I went in fairly much detail. I'll give you my notes. Yeah, Mr. Avni.
Speaking of the law of the sea,
does the UN have any independent way to test whether who committed those attacks on four ships in the Gulf?
I don't know what part of the UN you're referring to. You're referring to the Secretary General,
right.
We do not have a mandate unless requested. I mean, for this type of action, we would need a mandate from a legislative body, notably the Security Council.
Does he have any?
And I think a number of member states presented the evidence they have to the council, and they have, I think, pretty fairly extensive technical capabilities in that regard.
Regardless of who committed it, does he consider the attacks violation of freedom of navigation?
I mean, the Secretary General is very attached to the issue of freedom of navigation, I think, and has clearly condemned these attacks. Mr. Klein.
Yes, I may have missed it, but will the Secretary General be discussing either in meetings in Japan, bilateral meetings, or in forums, any human rights concerns? And for example, if he's planning to meet with Chinese President Xi, will he urge President Xi to invite the High Commissioner for Human Rights to visit for herself the detention camps of where the Uyghurs are being held?
There are ongoing discussions between the Chinese government and the Office of the High Commission for Human Rights, as far as I'm aware, in order for the High Commissioner to secure a visit in a way that is acceptable to her. The Secretary General fully supports the High Commissioner's efforts. As to the situation in Xinjiang, the Secretary General, as we've said, has already raised this with the Chinese authorities. Yes, ma'am.
I'm not pressing issues, but usually the 26th of June is also a day of commemoration for the victims of torture. Has that changed?
I'm not aware that it's not. I'm not aware that it's changed. The fact that I didn't mention it doesn't mean that it's not. I'm not the end-all and be-all of international days. Benny.
On Manama. There's a conference on the Palestinians happening there. As far as I remember, the UN is not represented there, or is it?
As far as you remember incorrectly, we did Latin announce, Vista. With due respect, Benny.
Don't disrespect me, please.
Sorry, let's get back to the issue at hand. No, the UN, the Secretariat is represented by Jamie McGoldrick, who is in charge of development humanitarian issues. And I expect to get something more from them, hopefully tomorrow, and he's there.
Any comment on the mere convening of such an event, which is unprecedented?
I would refer you back to what the special coordinator, Mr. Mladenov, said in his remarks to the Security Council not too long ago on that very issue. I shall get our guest, Mr. Errol, and then get our guest.
Thank you. Just one, because it was a very important question by Missy Abadi before to Monica, to check the position of the Secretary General and to think about. Since the Security Council's reforms are in deadlock, does the Secretary General think that during his mandate would be proper to think about amending or changing the UN Charter? And we have a day of UN Charter.
The Security Council reform, I mean, depending on how it goes, would most likely lead through, have to go through some sort of charter amendment. This is an issue that the member states have to decide for themselves. I mean, I think successive secretaries general from the time I've been here, and I feel sometimes have been here for a very long time, have all supported the idea of Security Council reform, have all called for Security Council reform. But there are certain things in this building, and most things in this building, are firmly in the hands of the member states. This is a member state-driven organization. The member states that sign on to the charter, it is for them to make the hard decisions and is for them to move that process forward. The Secretary General has called for that process to move forward, but it is for them to do that work.
So it's more secretary than general?
It's not secretary or general. I think today's a good day to reread the charter and to see where the authority of the Secretary General is and the authority of the member states. Changing the charter is for those who signed it, i.e. the member states. On that note, I shall get the special representative.
So good afternoon, everyone. I hope you are doing well today. I will start and Steph will follow, because today Steph has a guest. So we will have a guest later. This morning, Ms. Maria Fernanda Espinosa presided over an informal meeting at the GA Hall on combating antisemitism and other forms of racism and hate, the challenges of teaching tolerance and respect in the digital age. In her address, Ms. Espinosa quoted the late Nobel Peace Prize winner Elie Wiesel when saying that the opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference. The PGA said that we must redouble our efforts to ensure that never again becomes more than a slogan at last. We must work harder to ensure that the seeds of hate do not find fertile ground. She spoke about her own visit to Auschwitz-Birkenau Memorial and Museum in Poland last year, which she described as an experience that still deeply moves her. The PGA said that combating antisemitism involves several steps, such as education, changing mindsets, standing up for values, extending our vigilance to the internet and social media, among other actions. The meeting intended to enable a discussion on ways social media and other digital tools can be used for educational projects, to share best practices and lessons learned on combating hatred and intolerance. Ms. Espinosa's speech was followed by the Secretary General Antonio Guterres and Rabbi Israel Goldstein of the Shabbos Synagogue in Poway, California, who was shot during an attack on 27th April. The European Coordinator on Combating Antisemitism, Ms. Katharina von Schnurbein, and Mr. Ahmed Shahid, Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion or Belief, as well as representatives of member states, also spoke at the meeting, and many of them are still speaking. We have more than 40 speakers inscribed. Today, the UN marks the 74th anniversary of the signing of its charter in the U.S. town of San Francisco. To celebrate it, President Maria Fernanda Espinosa has invited member states for a symbolic ceremony, which will take place at 3 p.m. at the GA Hall. The event will also be an occasion to launch activities for commemorating the 75th anniversary of the organization, which will be celebrated next year, 2020. There will be a display of the text of the preamble to the charter in all six official languages, which will remain in situ at the headquarters as an expression of renewed commitment to the charter ahead of the 75th anniversary commemoration next year. A ceremony for symbolic signatures for ambassadors will take place at the GA Hall during the event. And the event also will start with remarks by the PGA, followed by a speech delivered by Mr. Fabrício Rothschild Drummond, the special advisor on the preparations for the commemoration of the 75th anniversary of the UN. And member states also have been invited to deliver remarks. And finally, as you know, all ANCA correspondents, that's the last call, guys, are invited to attend the press conference by the PGA here in the press briefing room tomorrow, the 27th of June, at 11 a.m. Ms. Espinoza will take your questions after delivering short opening remarks, and the press conference will be webcast by UN Web TV. And the entire briefing, of course, will be posted on our YouTube channel, United Nations GA73. And after our PGA press conference tomorrow, we will take a short break in the live press briefings here. You will receive, of course, every day our written press briefings and all communications related to the PGA. So if you're not on our mailing list, let us know. And we'll be back here on the 9th of July. This is actually everything from us today. Do you have any questions? You do, Greg? Okay, and afterwards, Melanie. Greg, go ahead.
Monica, regarding anti-Semitism that you were talking about, there are reports and some surveys lately which show that this tendency is on the rise somehow in the U.S., around the globe. So is there a sense like that with the PGA? Does she see that as a problem, some kind of raising of this phenomena?
Actually, she mentioned that in her speech, and it is actually posted on our website, quoting some surveys which indicate actually that an average of 100 posts, anti-Semitic posts, are posted on the social media channels nowadays. And yes, she sees the expression she used, actually, Greg, was that anti-Semitism is mainstreaming. So it is becoming, unfortunately, again, a problem, and that we as international community and also as individuals should be more vigilant, on social media channels, but on online platforms, and also in the way we talk about the issues. Yes, it is, to answer your question, a concern that she had and she expressed in her speech. And when she quoted, actually, Nobel Prize winner Elie Wiesel, she tried to explain exactly that we should not be silenced, we should be outspoken in really addressing the issue. And actually, she quoted the entire paragraph, and I can continue just to give you an idea. When he said, actually, starting by saying, the opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference. And then he continued by saying, silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. Wherever men or women are persecuted because of their race, religion, political views, that place must, at the moment, become the center of the universe. And she finished her speech by saying that she truly expected and believed that that could be a moment where we could turn the page and, and address this issue effectively for everybody. Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Abadi, go ahead.
Thank you, Monica. Yesterday, as you know, the President of the Assembly transmitted to member states a draft decision on the working of the Security Council. Mm-hmm. Listing all kinds of resolutions on the subject and inscribing it into the 74th session. Mm-hmm. But there was no substance in the document.
Yes, actually, what was transmitted, adopted yesterday, it was the oral draft, as she explained. There is actually a document from several pages online, and I can send you the link, where you have the outcome of the intergovernmental discussions or negotiations, I would say, by member states. As you may remember, that process was a closed meeting process, but the outcome is public online. And the reading, Mr. Abadi, by some analysts indicates that it was that progress was made during this current session. One of the proposals that received widespread support, for instance, was the question of regional representation for African countries, to give African countries a seat at the table. But of course, as we know, this is a process that is driven, decided by member states, and what was decided is there in this outcome document, which I can send to you, and the proposals, the reflections, and the decision by member states to continue this process in the next session was made.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.